Welcome back to another episode of the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It is slightly less dangerous this week because I am not your host, Greg. I am your host, Brian. And I'm joined on the call today by our usual cast of characters, again, minus Greg, who is currently schlepping his way across Northern Africa. We've got permanent podcast sidekick, Ben Daniels. Hello, Ben.
I mean, it's kind of bullshit that the sidekick doesn't get elevated to the host chair in the absence of the host. The fact that I have to remain a sidekick to this interloper is some real bullshit.
I think the thing is that the sidekick, then we'd have to replace the sidekick. And then, so then you would have a sidekick when you go back to being a sidekick. And
yeah.
I just feel like being the sidekick is such a demoralizing role to be in that we'd lose Rob entirely.
Look, I mean, Rob would make a great sidekick, and I think he should be thrilled about that esteemed position. I mean, it's like the vice president. When the president dies, the vice president gets to sit in that fucking chair.
Am I the like designated survivor of this podcast? Is that what's happening here?
No, I think that's what Kaylee is. Wherever he may be.
Right. And that second voice, obviously, is Reno Wallabout, or Rob, who is, I guess, now no longer a noted internet terrorist, but now the designated survivor of Wheeler Dealer Radio. So, congratulations. You've been upgraded.
Thanks, Brian. It's a real honor.
Yeah, you're welcome. See, I'm already making changes now that Skipjack's gone. We've got kind of a mixed bag of Tottenham Hotspur stuff to talk about. Some fun and interesting stuff, and some less interesting and less fun stuff. But I want to begin on a really somber note because the undrawable season is dead. And I really don't think we appreciated what we had with that. And it's a great loss to Tottenham Hotspur to have lost that undrawable season. And you know, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that, Ben, but I know this was kind of your torch to carry.
It was my entire brand. I mean, I really have nothing left at this point. Yeah, it's weird how, like, what a stupid thing it was that I literally, like, built up into a thing in my brain and got very excited about every week when we kept not drawing, to the point where I was, like, happy to lose because it meant we didn't draw. And now I don't really know what to do with myself. I feel very aimless.
Yeah, it was really weird in that Burnley game the other week, especially when it was 1-1 late in the game, and you're just like, well, whatever happens, I just hope it doesn't end this way. And then it didn't. It ended up with us losing, and you were oddly okay with that. And that was admirable, I thought.
It's twisted. That's what it is.
It is.
Being a Spurs fan does weird things to your psyche.
So, of course, the game that we drew that ruined the undrawable season came against none other than Arsenal, because they can't let us have anything fun. They're dicks. Spurs wound up drawing that match 1-1, thanks to some fun refereeing, some nuanced officiating that none of us knew anything about prior to the game, and also just a pretty poor performance, I'd say, all around. Wouldn't you agree, Rob?
Yes. Although, oddly enough, we played kind of okay in the first half that we were losing in, and then pretty shitty in the second half where we actually tied the score. So, I don't know. Go figure. I don't think either team was very good. I don't think the refs were very good. I think the whole thing was just kind of a shit show, but considering the week that we'd had leading up to it, all in all, it was probably a good enough ending for everybody, weirdly.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely won the half we lost and lost the half we won in terms of our performance, which is stupid, but strangely fitting. You know, I thought the first half, we actually played pretty well. We were creating pretty good chances. Besides Davinson Sanchez, his brain falling out while going up for a pretty routine header, you know, I thought we looked pretty comfortable. We didn't give up a lot of opportunities. And, you know, we had several chances where we could have gone in front. and then equalized after the fact. And then the second half, you know, we're just terrible. Emery made a change at halftime, kind of just like he did in our first game against Arsenal. And then we were kind of on the back foot and didn't really seem to know what to do with ourselves. We took off Victor Wanyama and dropped Eriksen deeper, and then we looked even worse in midfield, and we invited even more pressure. And somehow, in spite of all that, we managed to draw a penalty so we could equalize. It was just a really fucking stupid game. And then, of course, Arsenal won a penalty very late, as is Arsenal's wont. And it was a very, very soft penalty. I don't know if I would call it a dive. Davinson Sanchez, again, did very poorly to let Aubameyang get goal side of him in the build-up before giving away the soft penalty. But luckily for us, Aubameyang hit a really shitty penalty, and Hugo Lloris managed to save it, which I guess is like the second time he's saved a penalty ever, and also the second time he saved a penalty like this month. So it's been a weird ride.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to spend too much time talking about officiating decisions because I think that's boring and dumb. But like you said, Ben, that penalty on Aubameyang seemed kind of soft. The amount of contact there seemed minimal. And then, of course, after Aubameyang misses or Hugo Lloris saves, we have Jan Vertonghen encroaching on the penalty, which infuriated Arsenal fans to no end.
Which really was like the best possible outcome here, because a little bit of shithousery made that bitter pill a little easier to swallow. Because fuck Arsenal.
Right, and of course, and I think it was Rob was one of the folks that pointed this out, at least in our writers' room. Arsenal had been encroached on Harry Kane's penalty, but he didn't suck at taking penalties, so it didn't matter. So,
yeah, that's the thing. Aubameyang could have just like not missed the penalty.
Yep. Then there's no rebound for Jan Vertonghen to clear off the line. It doesn't matter. So, you know, just be better at football, guys.
Yeah. If I was Aubameyang, I would have simply not missed the penalty.
I mean, it's really that easy. I guess some of the other talking points from this, you know, if we're going to continue talking about officiating, we can talk about the new information we all learned about the offside rule and whether it's offside, whether you can foul people that are offside. Apparently, believe it or not, you can't just shove people over because they're offside. Who knew? Apparently not anybody that plays for Arsenal. So, you know, Spurs got a penalty that I think a lot of people thought was questionable at the time and seems to have engendered a lot of debate, you know, on Match of the Day and all the other various football podcasts and shows. But it seems like that's the correct decision.
Yeah, apparently if you're offside, you don't technically become offside until you interact with the ball or make a move towards the ball or somehow influence the play involving the ball. So it's still illegal to foul you until such time as that happens, when you would then become offside. So even though Harry Kane was in an offside position, he wasn't technically offside for the purpose of the offside rule, but he was a human being, and you can't foul human beings in soccer.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get confused because, you know, we so often, or not so often, but we sometimes see offside called on, you know, players who are not necessarily making a play on the ball, but are seen to be influencing play in the lead-up to a goal, whether that is they are in the way by screening the goalkeeper or they are influencing play by having a defender pull over towards them as opposed to going somewhere else. And we've seen that called. And so, you know, I understand the argument that some people were making that Harry Kane, by attacking the ball, even though he'd started in an offside position, was influencing play. But I think by the letter of the law, I think this was the decision that had to happen. You can't just clear out a guy just because he's offsides. Otherwise, we'd have, you know, goalkeepers just punching people in the head if they were offside.
It would be a pretty shitty loophole if you could just absolutely obliterate someone knowing that they were going to be offside at the conclusion of the sequence. Well, that would be pretty funny.
Yeah, I think it would make for a very interesting dynamic.
Like it's like the purge until the whistle blows.
Yeah, Sergio Ramos would be the biggest fan of that rule.
But, I mean, it does make sense because it's like, you know, you can say, well, you know, his offsides obviously influenced the play because it, you know, made the defender react to him in a certain way. But fouling somebody is never a permissible reaction. So you can't say he made me foul him by being in an offside position. You know, that's not a coherent stance.
Well, maybe if you're Mustafi, that's just how you feel about.
I think the funny thing about anybody. It is if Mustafi doesn't push Kane over and then subsequently into Koscielny, I think Koscielny probably clears that ball pretty easily. Like, I just don't think there's any reason for Mustafi to have shoved Kane there. Arsenal totally could have dealt with that free kick.
Yeah, every other outcome would have benefited Arsenal. Either Kane would have been called offside or they would have cleared it. There was only in Mustafi's mind was there any reason for him to do anything.
I mean, I think it probably helps that the last time Harry Kane was offside in a free kick, he headed the ball comfortably into the back of the net. So, I don't know. And honestly, I think that goal should have stood. So, fuck Arsenal, I guess.
In terms of other talking points from this match, I mean, you know, our midfield play wasn't great. As Ben alluded to earlier, this match saw the return of Victor Wanyama, who played like a guy that hadn't played football in about a month and a half. The Wanyama Sissoko midfield is not a midfield I ever want to see again. And I mean, we'll talk more about Moussa Sissoko later in the podcast because he'll actually warrant discussion then. But what did you guys think of Wanyama? You know, good to have him back, I guess, in theory, but in practice, not so great.
I didn't think he was that bad, to be honest.
I thought we were better with him than without him. You know, as much as he was clearly a guy shaking off a lot of rust and maybe not match fit or certainly not up to, like, Premier League speed, you know, I mean, he pressed well, he defended pretty well, like, he caused them problems in midfield in a way that was useful, even though it wasn't, like, you know, peak Wanyama.
He caused us problems in midfield, too, but...
Yeah, there's like, that.
He was never very good at passing the ball. So,
referring to the regista, Victor Wanyama?
He lost the ball a lot, and his passing was bad, but he was obviously rusty and hadn't played in a while. And, like, negative midfield is obviously going to be worse than slightly rusty Wanyama actually in the midfield, which we saw, because it definitely got worse when he went off.
And hopefully this is just sort of the start of his road back to fitness and being a useful contributor for this team, because as we all know, Harry Winks went off injured midweek, and so we're going to need some bodies.
I guess the other thing to talk about is fullback play, as is a recurring theme with Tottenham Hotspur for the last 2 years. I'd really like to go a week where we didn't have to talk about how our fullbacks played. But, you know, putting aside Kieran Trippier's continued existence, the most interesting thing that Tottenham Hotspur fullback did this weekend, and also in midweek, oddly enough, was Danny Rose got to play central midfield. And he just was basically an agent of chaos for, you know, a good portion of the second half. I don't think that's a thing I ever want to see again. But then I got to see it on Wednesday, and I became mostly certain I never wanted to see it again.
Yeah, that was a nightmare.
Yeah, see? Yeah, no,
I mean, it's not the first time we've seen it, is the thing. It's like, he has come on in the Champions League before and played midfield. Maybe he's done it in the league, but it's definitely a thing. It shouldn't be a thing. It's horrible. But...
I mean, he did it against Real Madrid in the Champions League last year, and I don't remember feeling that it was bad, because he was fresh at the time, and he was just basically coming in to run around and press and then also break out when we did counter late in the game. But this game, he'd been on the field from the go, and then we just decided, oh, yeah, he'll play in midfield. And, you know, meanwhile, we only used two subs, and we had actual midfielders like Oliver Skip on the bench, who, all right, I understand you maybe don't want to throw him out there in a North London derby when this game's close. But, I mean, I don't know. It just seemed like a really weird decision. Like, why not push Vertonghen or Alderweireld up into midfield? Why Danny Rose?
Yeah, and like the Real Madrid game, he came on as an extra midfielder to like help shore things up, not as the midfield. And I mean, that was the first was is kind of defensible because you're like, okay, yeah, he can run around and he can press and, you know, he can help out. But when he moved to midfield in this game, it was we were playing a Danny Rose, Musa Sissoko midfield, and that's very different. And it was a lot worse. You know, it would have been nice if Juan Foyth was on the bench because I maintain he would be a good defensive midfielder. But yeah, I mean, you know, Pochettino gave Ryan Mason his first Premier League start in midfield against Arsenal many, many years ago. So, like, putting on Oliver Skip in that role isn't so far beyond what we know Pochettino has done. This was madness. And the fact that he did it a second time after it clearly was bad the first time has me a little concerned.
Clearly the answer is that Pochettino is just slowly molting into late-stage Arsene Wenger, where the solution to any problem is to just throw on another left back. We're just going to sell that one, all right.
I think it's more of a...
Oh, Rob, you card. Is that better?
No, that's much, much worse.
I was going to say, I think it's more of a Pep Guardiola type thing, where, you know, you just want to try and experiment with as many fullbacks that can maybe play midfield at one time. And so maybe we're looking at the Danny Rose evolution into late-stage Philipp Lahm here. So, you know, it's an option.
Judging by the actual experience of it, I'm pretty sure we're not seeing that.
Well, that's why you're the negative person on this podcast, Rob.
Well, yeah, because you're the host now. So
yeah, exactly. So I don't get to do that anymore. And we're not going to talk about Heung-Min Son either. Spurs drew. We kept the distance between us and Arsenal for third place at a respectable distance. We are currently 3 points ahead of United, 4 ahead of Arsenal, and 5 ahead of Chelsea, who have a game in hand.
Yeah, so, and I think, you know, if we were going to draw a game, this is the one to draw, because a loss would have meant we were only 1 point ahead of Arsenal, and that is not a cushion I am comfortable with, given our respective schedules. They have a much easier run than we do. We still have to play Man City and Liverpool. As many points are in between us and Arsenal, the better. So, you know, pour one out to the undrawables, but it was a sacrifice that maybe needed to be made.
Right, and while...
Yeah, I think we'll take it. Given the circumstances, we're now, like, clearly in the fourth place race with a whole bunch of teams who are playing better than we are, so, yeah. Just to take the point, pour one out for the undrawables, and play a shitty team at the weekend.
Yeah, and there's another competition where we're hoping to play a shitty team. It is the Champions League. That's how a professional does transitions, fellas. We beat Borussia Dortmund across two legs. We even beat them in Germany, which was cool. And we're on to the quarterfinals for the second time since 2011. I think we're the only North London team to have played in a Champions League quarterfinal since then. So, sucks to suck, Arsenal. I think the best place to start for this match is to head over to the Moussa Sissoko news desk and hear from Rob.
Moussa Sissoko, assist machine? Fair to say?
He has more Champions League assists than Mesut Ozil this year.
There you go. The Moussa Sissoko experience summed up in two moments: the wonderful assist to Harry Kane for the only goal, and his dribble into the box, run out of options, and fall down move near the end of the game.
The classic Sissoko.
Which could only have been bettered by him trying to shoot and kicking the ball out of the stadium. But even at the news desk, we're a little speechless when it comes to Moussa Sissoko now. Against Arsenal, he was bad. Against Dortmund, he made a couple of really good defensive plays. He obviously had the assist. He did a ton of running and a ton of hard work. He made a ton of really crappy passes. But we would have been a lot worse off without him. So, man, he's man of the match, obviously, which is just a crazy thing that we have to keep saying.
So I think this match was notable not only for the performance of Moses Sissoko, but it was a match that Spurs really set up to soak up the pressure from Dortmund. And I think in years past, this is a game that might have made the Champions League tie a little bit closer and a lot more nervy. But despite Dortmund having more of the ball, despite them having more shots, I don't think this one ever really felt like we were going to not make it through, especially after we made it to halftime. I don't know how you felt about it, Ben, but it seemed mostly comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't comfortable per se. I mean, they had a lot of good chances in the first half. Hugo made a couple of really good saves. We had last-ditch heroic tackles from everybody, Vertonghen, Toby, Davinson, Sanchez. I mean, everybody showed up to play hero ball and keep us in the game. But like you said, the longer it went on with them not scoring, the less likely it became that they were going to score enough goals to get through. And then once we scored, I mean, the game was over. They weren't going to score five. That was never happening.
I think for me, like, as I was watching it, I was kind of breaking it down into 15-minute chunks. Like, okay, let's get through the first 15 minutes of this game without conceding. And, you know, we did that. And like you said, it wasn't – comfortable was probably the wrong word for me to use. But, like you said, everybody showed up. Lloris made a lot of saves. The defenders were making last-ditch tackles. And we made it through that first 15 minutes. And it's like, okay, all right. And then kind of in the middle of the first half, we got on the ball a little bit better. Actually, I guess it was more towards the end of the first half. We got on the ball a little bit better. We put Dortmund under some pressure. We slowed the tempo down a little bit and tried to retain possession as opposed to just kind of lumping things up and trying to get runs in behind. And then we made it to halftime without conceding. And you know, after that, I kind of felt like we were mostly home free, which I guess is maybe kind of a weird thought to have as a Spurs fan, because I don't know that, you know, this team from 2, 3, 4 years ago would have been able to see out a result like this.
I mean, we had a 3-goal lead. That's a comfortable cushion. it would have been very hard to throw that away. But, I mean
we've
you're
seen
right.
some
How
weird
we
things in the Champions League this week.
We have. And, you know, we've seen us throw away leads against Juventus very recently. It wasn't an impossibility. But, again, it was, you know, every minute that passed without them scoring, it got easier and easier. And I think had they put one past us in the first 15 minutes, it could have gone a lot differently. And it could have been a lot more nervy. But, ultimately it wasn't. Which is a weird feeling.
You know, it kind of actually followed the pattern of the first leg of the tie, in that we were under pressure, and Dortmund were probably the better team in the first half. And then the second half, as soon as we got the goal, it just deflated them and took the wind out of their sails. And after that, it just kind of cruised. We didn't get two more stupid goals, but at that point, I think they read the writing on the wall. But like you said, Ben, it's kind of, sports are funny in that way, that had they scored one of those early chances, like immediately the pressure switches onto Tottenham and it's like, oh no, is this going to happen again? But knowing that they had the lead, there's a certain margin for error. And you know, on the one hand, like, there were lots of great last-ditch tackles, and Hugo had to make a lot of saves. On the other hand, like, if you have to make a lot of last-ditch tackles and your keeper has to make a lot of fantastic saves, you're obviously not playing very well. So, I mean, I don't know how much credit they really deserve for that first half, but then the second half was more of what a lot of the journalists have been saying about how it was a very mature performance and very different performance than we're used to seeing from Tottenham, especially in Europe.
I think we deserve a lot of credit, especially after you know, the last 2 days and seeing Ajax turn over Real Madrid and Man U turn over PSG, both with seemingly comfortable leads. I mean, I know Man U were the first team to ever give up two goals at home or lose 2-0 at home in a Champions League knockout fixture and then still win, you know. So we saw Ajax, I mean, beat the shit out of Real Madrid, and Man U managed to turn over PSG, you know. And I think that shows just how, even as comfortable as we thought we were still in a precarious position, and a good team coming out to play at home could have done us some damage. And I think, you know, yes, we didn't set up as well as we could have. You know, our tactics weren't wonderful. We gave up a lot of opportunities, but given those, you know, starting conditions, I thought everybody, you know, did their job very effectively in a way that, you know, you can't say the same about Kylian Mbappe or everybody at Real Madrid. So,
yeah, no, you know, Hugo Lloris still has to make those saves. Vertonghen still has to make those tackles, and Kane still has to finish his one great chance. And like, our star players showed up when in other games recently, other teams' star players haven't in the same way. So yeah, no, it's the situation wasn't great, and you know, it was not this sort of perfect performance that maybe it's been painted as. But at the same time, like, our good players brought their lunch pails, and we got the job done.
One of the players who we got to see for the first time in a while in this match, and who I think really kind of helped us settle down in the second half, was Eric Dier, who came back from having whatever body part he doesn't necessarily need removed now. I think this was tonsillitis this time. It doesn't really matter. It's probably all fake injuries. He's probably trying to move to Manchester United. Harry Winks got injured and had to limp off. And Dier came on, and he looked good, I thought. This was kind of the first time we've seen him in quite a while. And despite having not played, he helped calm things down in midfield.
Yeah, for sure. And he's definitely a guy we're going to need fit for the run-in, because as well as Moussa Sissoko and Harry Winks have done holding our fragile midfield together, you know, I think they're nobody's first choice, or they shouldn't be anybody's first choice.
Well, they're Pochettino's first choice, midfield, obviously.
Yeah. Well, you know, all things considered, they are. But I think having guys like Dier and Wanyama working their way back into fitness for our run-in in both the league and the Champions League, it's a huge boost. You know, I mean, we have held this team together with duct tape over the last couple months. So it's nice to see him back.
And I think, you know, the return of Dier, while he doesn't bring the same level of or the same range of passing that Harry Winks does, he provides the sort of defensive solidity that maybe you'd not maybe, that you definitely need kind of in the latter stages of the Champions League, and that we've kind of sorely missed in the league during this last kind of weird run. So it'll be good to have him back, and then hopefully we're only a few weeks away from Dele Alli returning from injury as well, and that'll really kind of square away a lot of our midfield issues.
Yeah, I mean, we can't overstate how much we've missed Dele Alli over the last little while. You know, when he's played this season, he's been phenomenal, and it's a shame we've seen so little of him. But if he gets back fit, you know, that's going to be another huge boost for us down the stretch.
One of the interesting things to come out after this game is that Mauricio Pochettino said he thought that Spurs would be playing the home leg of their next fixture in the new stadium. That seems kind of unlikely to me based on Pochettino's comments like 2 weeks ago, where he said he thought it was very unlikely that we would play there. I don't know. Rob, do you think he's talking out of both sides of his mouth, or is this something we should actually be getting our hopes up for?
No.
Yeah, why would we hope anything? I don't know why.
No.
I asked you a question.
No,
well,
never
hope for anything.
Two reactions to that. Why would we ever expect anything good to happen? And I long ago gave up taking anything that Pochettino says in public at face value. So, I mean, he lies, man. I don't know. But, I mean, he might have some inside information on this. But at the same time, I feel like if you look at what he actually said, it was a lot of, like, I hope and wish that we will be playing our next home game in the new stadium. So, like, there's still a lot of gray area in there. And given every disaster that's happened with the stadium up till now, like, I'll believe it when they actually play the game there.
And if I'd been more professional, I would have been prepared so that I could tell you what the dates of the quarterfinals were. But I have no idea. It looks like they're the 9th and 10th of April and the 16th and 17th of April. So, I don't know. Maybe that's within the realm of possibility if we had the second leg at home.
I mean, I don't believe we're ever going to open that stadium. It's not a real stadium. I don't live in London, but if you told me that construction hadn't started and everything that we'd seen on the internet was a lie, I'd believe you.
Yeah, why not? I think, you know, unfortunately, because the game was 1-0 and because it ended up that the result was, you know, not all that interesting over the two legs, I think the more interesting thing to talk about for the Champions League is kind of what's happened in the last, today at least, and then I guess to somewhat of an extent yesterday with the Real Madrid and Ajax game. The Champions League is kind of shaping up where it looks like a competition where Spurs have a puncher's chance, as opposed to just a week ago when you were like, well, maybe we can make a decent run, but there's a lot of teams better than us.
Yeah, I think 538 gives us a 41% chance of advancing to the next round and a 6% chance of making the final. You know, the 6% chance is whatever, but 41%, that's a, you know, that's basically a coin flip. You know, given how things have shaken out, you know, there's obviously going to be some teams we don't want to draw, but, you know, some of those ties are still in the balance, and there could be a lot more shitty teams coming through after next week's games. But, you know, right now we have, you know, Porto and Ajax as possibilities, and, you know, even though Ajax exposed Real Madrid for the frauds that they are, on paper and, you know, in my head, it sounds better to get to play Ajax than it does to play Real Madrid. So, yeah. You know, there's a lot of opportunities for favorable matchups in the next round. I mean, we're going to draw Man City, and it's going to be not only boring because we're going to play an English team, but it's going to be terrible because we're going to lose. But, you know, there's a real chance that we draw somebody worse. And
yeah, I mean,
that's,
you know,
exciting.
Look, I mean, after the Ajax Real Madrid result, Schalke could beat Real Madrid or beat Man City. It seems a very remote possibility, but
City have done plenty of incredibly stupid things in the Champions League. Yeah. So I would not put that past them.
And they've lost to Newcastle in the league. Like, City's good for losing to a dumb team every once in a while. You know,
Lyon can still get through. Like, there's opportunities here for bad things to happen to good teams.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Liverpool can get knocked out. I think I'd still rather play Bayern Munich than Liverpool. I'm not 100% certain on that anymore, given how Bayern have picked it up, kind of, and Liverpool seem to be tailing off a little bit. But I still think I'd rather play Bayern than Liverpool. And like you said, Lyon and Barca, their tie is still up in the air. And what's the other one? Oh, Atletico Madrid and Juventus, which, you know, all right, whatever. Kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. So, yeah, I mean, the Champions League draw could shake out well for Spurs. There's a possibility that all four English teams that could go through, which would then automatically mean that they're all drawn against each other, because I think that's how these things work. So I don't know. It's exciting now. Like Ben said, the 41% chance of making the semifinals, where you're basically a coin flip now before you've even been drawn against anybody else. That feels good.
And even beyond Tottenham's chances, just the whole thing is so wide open now that, like, it's kind of fun that it won't be Real Madrid and some other Spanish team.
Yeah, I mean, we say this now, and it'll be like Bayern Munich and Juventus in the finals, and we'll be like, oh, same old thing every year.
Yeah, it could still be stupid and boring, but like, and we've been talking about this for a while. Like, none of the teams look really dominant. Nobody looks really like world beaters. Any of these teams could lose, especially over two legs. So, you know, I think Tottenham could win the whole thing. Why not? Sure.
Yeah, I think my thing is, though, is I want us to avoid an English team for the reason that Ben said, that's boring. And also, too, because I think City and Liverpool probably over two legs are better than us. I would probably take us against Manchester United, but City and Liverpool I don't exactly relish playing. I'd rather they get drawn against each other and knock each other out.
Yeah, and one of the best things about, you know, City and Liverpool is, you know, they, after this weekend, they both really need to keep one eye on the league, with City going a point ahead of Liverpool at the top of the table. You know, they can't just say, you know, it's not like last year where City were running away with it, and not that it helped, but, you know, could focus on the Champions League. They don't really have that luxury. Neither team does. You know, they have to manage their resources to try to win the title. And that could certainly help us, you know, if we have the unfortunate circumstance of getting drawn against them. And it could also help us in that they both get knocked out next week. So,
yeah, I mean, who knows? And, you know, as it stands now, without knowing the other four teams that are going to be through, but assuming that Atletico are going to be one of them, I think as it stands, you'd probably want Ajax or Porto. I mean, I don't think, unless Lyon suddenly won, beat Barcelona, I think those would be the two teams that you would want.
I don't know that we want Lyon's midfield.
Yeah, but they're kind of weird in Serie A or Ligue 1 this year. They haven't been as good as their talent would indicate.
No, some of their Champions League performances have been pretty impressive.
They have. They did beat Manchester City at the Etihad, right?
That sounds right.
I think that's true. But we don't do any preparation.
Let's not pretend we've done any research.
No, yet. We've done no preparation. We're just basically winging it as we go along here. All right, so that's the Champions League. We're now just waiting for the next round of fixtures to see who we draw. The draw, I believe, is on March 15th, and they draw both the quarterfinals and the semifinals at the same time. So, you know, by two episodes from now, we'll be able to talk about our Champions League draw and how it was the worst thing to ever happen to us. In the meantime, Spurs have a game this weekend against Southampton. But manager Mauricio Pochettino will be serving a touchline ban because Mike Dean's an asshole. I'll leave it up to you guys. Which one of you wants to talk shit about Mike Dean first?
It's all you, Ben.
I mean, fuck Mike Dean. It's fucked up because we have seen Jurgen Klopp, we've seen so many other managers get into referees' faces and talk shit and not get punished at all, let alone with a two-match touchline ban and a £10,000 fine. You know, this seems fucking ludicrous, but it does make me really, really want to know what they said in that exchange, because, you know, assuming, which you can't, but assuming this is like any way remotely fair and earned, like something really fucked up had to have happened in that conversation, and I am dying to know what exactly was said, because it had to be really, really juicy.
Well, the video where you can actually hear some of the audio of the Tottenham Hotspur coaches talking, it's you can hear Jesus Perez and Tony Jimenez basically telling Mike Dean, like, you can't say that, like, that's not your place, you're not supposed to be saying those sorts of things. So it has to be something wildly unprofessional.
Right, and unprofessional on Mike Dean's part more than anybody's, and we don't know that. And Poch has said he's not going to tell us, but, like, fucking tell us, man.
Yeah, especially like, now that you're already suspended. Like, you've been suspended now, you took your fine. Like, look, you know, I appreciate Pochettino having the class to sit in his press conference.
And I don't.
Yeah, where did it get him?
Got him his two-game touchline ban. But
exactly.
I like to maintain the illusion that my football club is not as shitty as other football clubs. And so when my football club and my football club's manager gets up in front of the press and goes, yeah, you know what? I crossed the line. Shouldn't have done that. I take full responsibility. I'll take whatever the FA gives me. That's great. I like that. And when, you know, Jose Mourinho gets, you know, brought up on charges and, you know, appeals at the very last minute, so he avoids having to serve his ban for one game, and then the appeal gets granted and he only has, you know, the fine and not the touchline ban, like...
You're a terrible lawyer, Brian.
Yeah, like, I know.
You do not want your client going up there and admitting culpability and saying, I will throw myself on the mercy of the court. You fucking fight this shit, and you say, actually, Mike Dean's an asshole. Here's what Mike Dean said. He should never referee again because he's an unprofessional monster, and this is no way to behave as a referee. And any right-thinking person would find my behavior justified because how dare Mike Dean? That's how you approach this, because... whatever happened as a result of this is fucked.
I just feel like at work I don't get to be on the morally right side very often. So it's nice to be able to think that in the sporting world I can be on the side that is morally correct.
Morally correct letting your client go to jail? Wow.
Well,
Brian.
I mean, they very rarely do they send insurance companies to jail. So I think I'm fine. We'll see, though. We'll see. Who knows what happens in the next couple years?
It would be a nice change.
Yeah, you know, I can't say that I'd be opposed to it.
If corporations are going to be people, then they should be eligible for the death penalty. That's all I'm saying.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That took a turn.
I don't think there's much else to say about Southampton other than that they're playing better and maybe don't look like they'll get relegated now. Rob, any thoughts?
You're correct. They have a real manager now. They don't have Sparky anymore. But they're still kind of shitty, and we should beat them.
Yeah, I mean, again, this just goes back to our level of professionalism. If we had even thought we would get to this point in the podcast where we would actually talk about this match, I think we all would have done a little bit of something. But we breezed through everything because we didn't have Greg here to make professional wrestling jokes while we sat in silence for a couple minutes. So
Southampton aren't good. Danny Ings is still hurt, so they're going to play Charlie Austin or Shane Long up front. James Ward-Prowse has finally, after many years of being a very promising youth prospect, gotten a run in the team, and he is on fire right now. He's scoring, he's assisting, he's scoring free kick goals. He's dangerous.
Southampton are currently in 17th place.
Yeah, they're not good.
2 points above the relegation zone.
I don't know if you guys can hear it, but we're all frantically Googling right now.
I don't even have a Google near me. I just play a lot of fantasy soccer, and so I'm aware of the players on all of the teams and their utility for my fantasy team.
I think the interesting thing is that Southampton are playing better while also still not playing particularly well. Since the start of February, they've lost to Cardiff, lost to Arsenal, lost to Manchester United, drawn with Burnley, and beaten Fulham. So, I mean, it's not like while they're playing better, the results aren't necessarily better. But I think
because they're not good. I mean, that's the thing. They're not good, and their best player is Danny Ings, and he's injured. So there's only so much you can do with that.
Yeah.
You know, they just changed out their goalkeeper to the young Angus Gunn.
Now you're just showing off.
Yeah, now you're just making up players. Like Tim Gunn weirdly has a son that plays professional.
They're going to make it work.
Yeah. That's a niche reference for some people, I think.
The best thing I can say about this match is that it will not be at 7:30 in the morning.
See, I like the 7:30 kickoffs, but I'm always up then, so it doesn't really matter.
10
a.m. is fine.
Yeah, 10's fine, I guess. From the Spurs perspective, this is just another football match that our 12 players will be forced to play. It's weird. Pochettino really hasn't rotated at all, despite what this will be our fifth match in 12 days, 14 days.
Yeah, but after this, we have like a month off, right? So,
well, I mean, we have a month off, but all the players are going to go off to international duty and get injured. So, yeah, it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, and we had 13 days off before the Burnley match, and look what how that worked. So, you know.
At least the remaining injured players can be a little bit less injured by the time we have to play a real match again.
Yeah, Christian Eriksen is the player that I think has kind of most started to look tired. And obviously when he goes away on international duty, he will get no rest because I'm pretty sure he's the only player that plays for Denmark. So, you know, Eriksen hasn't gotten subbed off a lot. I think he's played all five of these games the full 90 minutes. He's played all four of the games so far, a full 90 minutes. And so if he plays a full 90 this weekend, I mean, we're just trying to get as much out of him before we sell him, I guess.
Is he really going to want to go to Real Madrid at this point? Wow.
I don't know. Maybe he really has a desire to play for Jose Mourinho.
He does not have a desire to play for Santiago Solari, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, even if he did, I don't think he's going to want to go to, like, Cordoba or Rayo Vallecano or wherever Solari's going to turn up next season.
Maybe he'll just stay. Wouldn't that be nice? I made another joke and you didn't sell it.
Well, I'm just so shocked by the optimism, I don't know how to respond to it.
Laughter.
Sorry.
Rob, you've done it again. You devil, you.
See, Ben's getting it.
Yeah, we'll get it eventually. We just gotta work the kinks out. You know, Greg usually says, and on that note, I don't know, there's not a note to end this on. Like,
what's the meander to hanging up the phone?
Yeah, I mean, like any other conversation you have with your friends, you're like, okay, yeah, well, good job, guys. See you later. Yeah, we'll be back this time next week, and we'll get to talk about probably how the other Champions League games went and what we think of who we'll be able to draw, and probably a loss to Southampton, because why the fuck not? All right, so we'll do what we always do for this. Rob, where can people find you on the internet?
I am Reno Wallabout on Twitter, and Greg's not here, so we don't have to make those stupid Brit Rainbow jokes anymore.
It's weird that you think those Brett Rainbow jokes are for Greg. But, all right, well, Ben, what about you? Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs, and I will not be making a Brett Rainbow joke this week either. Wow. I stand in solidarity with Rob.
Wow. I really should have asked you all what you're drinking. So I have so many regrets right now. All right, so, and you can find me on the internet at Brian, is there an underscore? I think it is. Brian_Ashlock, that's Brian with a Y. Yes, I do know my own Twitter handle. And you can also find me tooting on Mastodon at Brett Rainbow, because...
Boo!
Why would we not include that in this podcast?
Boo! We were free, Brian, we were free, and you roped us back in, like a hack.
Well, that is the Wheeler Dealer Radio brand. So, for Ben, for Rob, and for myself, and not for Skipjack, because screw that guy, this has been Wheeler Dealer Radio, and come on, you Spurs.